Welcome to This Is Money. I'm Georgie Frost, and alongside editor Simon Lamb, but me today is assistant editor Lee Boyce. And last week, it was all about holidays. This week, as lockdown eases, car showrooms are reopen, we're going mobile. The government's announced a plan to get us off public transport, not mandatory face masks, by the way. It's a £2 billion package to create a new era, apparently, for cycling and walking. Simon thinks he's found a key to make this work. From electric bikes to electric cars, new registrations were up last month as petrol and diesel vehicles tanked. With a new scrappage scheme reportedly on the cards, is now the time to bag a bargain? Plus, do you need special insurance to become a delivery driver? Don't forget you stay up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. But firstly, face masks on public transport, more money to get us walking and cycling, working from home, staggered times into the office, a short-term fix to a current problem, or a longer-term change in the way Britain works. Lee, what do you reckon?
I think we are going to see some big changes, Georgie, and often a big seismic event like this does, you know, herald an era of change. And I wonder if that's what's going to happen, if that's going to be one of the impacts of coronavirus, you know, in the future. Will we be seeing more people, you know, maybe put off making those trips on public transport, you know, maybe those short hops on a bus or where they can, just try and avoid it because worries over, you know, having to wear face masks, you know, it's much better to be out in the open air. That's what I reckon a lot of people will be feeling like, you know, where it's realistic and where it's possible. So I think that we will see much more cycling and walking in the longer term, but I think short term, I think a lot of people, you know, there's been lots of talk about people heading into work in their cars where they wouldn't usually use their cars. You know, that's what we've been kind of encouraged to do because it's probably a little safer than, you know, taking your chances on public transport. And, you know, in a time in which people are worried about coronavirus, I think that's what a lot of people will be doing. But that said, you know, in that period of real lockdown and when road traffic was down, I think a lot of people saw improvements in, you know, there was a massive rise in people, for example, dusting off old bikes that might not have done previously, got them repaired or bought new bikes and had the confidence to get out back on the road. Perhaps they hadn't done it for a very long time and to get cycling again, for instance, because, you know, a lot of worries, especially people that live in cities, is over, you know, having an accident, you know, getting involved in a collision with a car or a lorry or something like that. So I think in that respect, it's encouraged a lot of people back on the roads to cycle. Whether that keeps going, you know, in the future depends on the infrastructure that's put into place. You know, and we've seen in London, these cycle highways, for example, have become, you know, there's quite a few of them that have popped up in the last 5, 10 years. Simon will be a much bigger expert on this than I am. And also, just getting out, you know, just walking, Georgie. I think a lot of people just have realised that, you know, they don't have to always rely on public transport to get from A to B. You know, again, mainly I'm talking about cities here, but you could get out, get on your feet. And I think there's been a lot more of that going on. And it would be good to see, you know, with things like this, that the government's, there was a £5 billion of funding that came out in February before coronavirus anyway. And this is a fund that they are using, basically, they came out with a couple of weeks ago as part of this. So £2 billion investment of making it easier to cycle, allegedly, and to walk. So things like pop-up bike lanes with protected space, wider pavements, safer junctions, and cycle and bus-only corridors. I saw my local area where I was in London before, between Brixton and Herne Hill, they've come up with this low-traffic neighbourhood, and apparently quite a few of these are popping up in London as well, where they're closing off sort of, you know, wrap run roads that a lot of commercial vehicles and things use, to closing them off and just making them basically almost pedestrianized, where you can, you know, safely cycle, safely walk. Wouldn't be surprised to see more of those pop up in the coming months.
Simon, what do you reckon? Short-term fix, longer-term change?
Well, a couple of weeks back, actually probably almost a month ago now, we had this announcement of a new £2 billion package to create a new era for cycling and walking from the government. And it said, alternative ways to travel, such as walking and cycling, could relieve the pressure on public transport. Whoever thought of walking and cycling, these newfound ways of travel? Absolutely amazing. What will they think of next? The problem is, basically, as we ease lockdown and slowly emerge from lockdown, like an animal coming out of hibernation extremely, extremely slowly, people have been told to avoid public transport and use their cars where possible. If we were to go back to a scenario where everybody was going to work as normal tomorrow, we'd have a massive issue, because public transport at the time when everybody needs to use it is pretty full in this country. You're squished onto a tube. It's standing room only on the trains, certainly traveling into London. Outside of London, public transport's pretty woeful in this country. But even then, you know, the buses, the early morning commute buses tend to be busy. The metro systems tend to be busy at those times. So everyone has been told to get in their car, except that completely reverses the policy that we've had for the last however many years of trying to get people out of their cars, because cars are considered to be a particularly bad way to travel because they are polluting, and they cause congestion, and they don't carry many people. If you look at most cars, certainly at commuter times, they've maybe got one or two people in them max. And then you've got the whole school run issue. The problem has always been that public transport in most places outside of London, as I said, hasn't been good enough to get people out of their cars. But now even in London, they're being told to get in their car. So the government has come up with these newfangled ways of getting around called cycling and walking. The only problem is that the cycling and walking, walking infrastructure in this country is not too bad. I mean, there's quite a lot of pavement. But the cycling infrastructure isn't really up to it. And people are scared of cycling because they don't like cycling on the roads. They're worried. But we don't really have enough off-road cycle lanes. And where we have tried to put in off-road cycle lanes, there's been a massive backlash because there's an argument that they cause more congestion on the roads, and then they're empty a lot of the time, which is not necessarily true. If you take a photo of them at 11:30 in the morning, you can definitely get a photo showing the cycle superhighway is empty. If you take a photo of it when everybody's traveling to and from work, it is far from empty. I've used them. Now, as someone who used to cycle to work pretty much every day of the week, all year round, for about 14 years leading up to March, all the way across 8 miles across London, I'm not the best person to ask about this because I'm fine with the cycling thing and taking the risk. Mm. But I do totally understand people's concerns. But what really frustrates me is not necessarily the cycling infrastructure in the cities, which actually I think is quite good in London, for example. There has been a lot of off-road cycle routes built. There has been a lot of these cycle superhighways. If you do want to take quiet streets rather than the main roads, it is quite well signposted. You have to wiggle around a bit, but London's it's a British city that's grown up since the Roman times. It's not a, you know, grid planned US city where you can just go in a straight line. It's out of town that's the issue. It's going from town to town. People do a lot of car journeys out of town. Are people taking the kids to school? Are people driving to the station? Are people going to work from a village in the next town, or going from the village to the town, or from one town to another town? And there are very, very few off-road cycle routes between those places. And it drives me mad because I think this is an easy solution. I think that what we need is a push to basically do direct routes from places where people tend to go from and to. You can identify them and you can just pick some routes and do them. And the councils and the government should provide a fund for the councils to purchase strips of land that run across them and build off-road cycle routes and walking routes that they can make safe and that people can use. And I'll give you an example of this that maybe I've mentioned on this podcast before. I'm not living in London anymore. Moved out to Hertfordshire at the start of March. We're living with my mum temporarily at the moment. Down the road from my mum's, they've built a new secondary school to serve the kids of the town, and also of the village nearby, which their kids in the village don't get into the schools in the town anymore because there's the whole secondary school places issue. Now, arguably, they've built this school in the wrong place because it's not on the side of town that would benefit the kids who don't get into the schools in the town. But disregarding that, they built it where it is. But one of the primary functions of this secondary school is to help out the kids in the village who can't get school places. But there is no route to this school from that village that does not involve having to cross a main road. There is no cycle route that runs directly. There is pavement all the way, but you have to cross a main road in order to use the pavement all the way. And the pavement is not very wide in some places, and the road in normal times is a very busy road. Now, it beggars belief that the council has gone to the trouble of building this school, purchasing the land in the Green Belt, fighting this whole thing because it was well fought by people who didn't want that school there, but has not put a link between the village called Wheat Hampstead, and the school, which is in a town called Hoppenden. Basically, there are fields between the two. There's even an old railway line that runs half the distance that provides an off-road cycle route, but then it stops because there's been some houses built and everything. But there's a footpath that you could pick up. It beggars belief that the council has not gone, you know what, why don't we make it that instead of all of these children having to be driven to school every day because basically they don't think it's safe for them to go off-road, that they could cycle it, or that, you know, it's probably a little bit far for them to walk, but they could walk it without having to go near the main road. And this is a story that plays itself out all around the country. And I just think it's a real shame that people have got back on their bike.
It's about money, but
are we serious about helping the environment and getting people out of their cars? We have to spend the money. You know, it's not even a particularly expensive project to do something like that.
Is $2 billion enough, though, this investment from the government? Would it be put in the right places? Because we needed this anyway, as you've just said.
Because nobody's coming up with these. You're not seeing these schemes and these plans. And we've got a wonderful network of bridleways and footpaths in this country, but they date back, I don't know, like 100, 150, 200 years, hundreds of years. They're ancient routes that were mapped out. There's this thing called the definitive map, and they're campaigning to try and save lost footpaths at the moment. But where are the new footpaths? Where are the equivalent of bridleways, which would now be, I guess, cycle routes, because not that many of us ride horses most of the time nowadays. I just think we need to think a bit more creatively and a bit bolder. And I think it's a shame that at a point when everybody has, like Lee said, people have been getting back out on their bike sales through the roof, bike shops doing a roaring trade, all that kind of stuff, while they've built their confidence up while the roads are quiet, they're just going to go back to using the cars. Because once the traffic's back to normal, they're going to go, nah, I did like it, but it's too dangerous now.
Yeah, confidence is a huge one for me. I'd love to. And you know what? After reading your article, and we'll get onto this, about electric bikes, I did take a wee look at what was out there. Everything's sold out at the moment, so good luck if you can try and find one. But I do fancy an electric bike, Simon. And you gave that a go on your 1 million miles around London for work all the time. How was it?
Okay, so I borrowed for about 3 weeks, and bear in mind this is in pre-lockdown days.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'm going to make a special confession for listeners of the This Is Money podcast. I borrowed this bike quite a long time ago. It was kind of last summer.
Okay.
And it's taken me that long to get around to writing about it, but I've been meaning to for quite a long time. I borrowed a bike called a GoCycle GX, and it is an electric folding bike. The founder of the company used to work at McLaren, the car company. Mm. So there's some high-end design going into this. And it's got that sort of similar folding bike style to it, like a Brompton, but it looks a lot more space age than a Brompton. It's got one hinge in the middle that folds it double, and then you just attach a little rubber clip so that holds it together, and then the handlebar drops down, and then you can flip it up and wheel it along on the saddle if you want to wheel it along. But the more important bit is the riding it thing. And it's got battery assistance, and I'll go into a little bit about the rules around electric bikes and battery assistance in a minute. But basically, I looked at this bike, and I thought, when I was contacted by GoCycle and asked if I wanted to borrow one, I thought, yeah, all right, I'll give it a go. But I thought I'll probably use it a couple of times and then I'll just go back to riding my normal bike. I looked at it, I was like, it's not going to be much fun to ride. It's an expensive bike, the £2,800. Yeah. But which is a lot of money. I mean, you could buy a car for that. You could buy a sort of minor modern classic car, and it might even go up in value. But there are a lot of people who spend more than that on their bikes, serious cyclists. But it's not the kind of bike you'd see a serious cyclist on. Until I rode it, and it was brilliant fun. It handled incredibly well. It's got slightly bigger wheels than the Brompton, so it's got 20-inch wheels. That's like BMX-size wheels. It's got a longer wheelbase, which helps with the handling. And it was phenomenally good fun to ride and very nimble. And the electric assistance, there are three set modes, or you can set your own sort of level of assistance how you want it using the app that connects to it. And they give you different levels of electric assistance. Now, what you're not allowed to do is just hold a button and ride it along like a little electric motorcycle. You actually have to be pedaling for the electric assistance to come in. That's the law in this country. And it can only help you up to 15.5 miles an hour. After that, you can go faster than that on the bike. It's not like speed limited or anything, but you won't get any more electric assistance. And it's got an intelligent kind of system that works out how much assistance you need. So if you're only pedaling very lightly and very slowly around, it won't give you much assistance at all. If you are putting in lots and lots of effort, like you're going up a hill or something like that, then it will give you more of it. And it is absolutely brilliant. I'm totally sold on electric bikes after this. I always thought, what is the point of them? But I really do see it. And the way that I see them as being really good is because they're not going to appeal to people like me who would just cycle a normal bike, whatever. Mm. I'm not a particularly serious cyclist. For me, it's a mode of transport and it's a bit of fun. I don't own any Lycra. I don't have a Strava app, that kind of stuff. But I do love riding a bike, but I just ride a bike anyway. It's the people who wouldn't ride a bike normally. It's the people who live, 5 miles from the station, but it's up and down three big hills. It's the people who think, oh, I would like to ride, but it's too much hassle, or I don't want to turn up hot and sweaty, or various other things. And I think that that's where electric bikes have the real power to change things, because it can get the people who wouldn't otherwise be riding out there on their bikes. I mean, as an example of this, my cousin and her husband live in the Alps, and Renault, my cousin's husband, bought himself an electric mountain bike, to which my cousin Laura said, why don't you just do some exercise? And he's like, no, because it means that in the summer I can go out on the bike and I can go up the mountain and I'll go to places that I wouldn't otherwise go, because riding a bike up a mountain is phenomenally difficult. Riding an electric bike up a mountain is considerably easier. And I must admit, last year I went away for a long weekend to Tel Aviv, and over there they have embraced electric bikes like crazy. They are flying around all over the place, and electric scooters as well. It's kind of very much slightly organized chaos. But there's a lot of people getting around what is a notoriously congested city much quicker and much easier under electric power. And I looked at it, I thought, maybe this might be a glimpse of the future, although hopefully a little bit more organized and less dangerous looking.
Let's hope so. Lee, fancy one?
I was going to say, George, I fall into the category of someone who's taken their bike recently to Halfords to get it fixed up a bit. I had a flat tyre, had all sorts of going on with it, and I just don't have the time to fix it all up, if I'm being honest. So they sorted it out for me. It was pretty inexpensive, to be honest, and I'm just waiting at the moment for the baby seat. You can attach it to the back of your bike so I can carry the little one around, and I know that she's going to love that. In terms of e-bikes, I mean, everything Simon says there are those kind of common things, isn't it? Like, oh, do some actual exercise. Why do you need to have a battery-powered bike to take some of the strain? But actually, some cycling is incredibly difficult. And sometimes when I drive around the rural roads here in Essex and I see people struggling up hills, I think, cool, you could probably do with an electric bike for a bit of assistance here. And I'll give you an example of how far this has gone and how much of the popularity of e-cycling is going. I spoke to my dad on the phone a couple of weeks ago, who's in his 70s, and he lives in Leicestershire. And I said, oh, how is everything going? Are you all right? And he's like, oh, yeah, partner and I have invested in electric bikes. Now, I would never have put my dad down as someone who would get an electric bike. But he was telling me that they've been exploring all sorts of pockets of rural Leicestershire that they would never have done before, because they just wouldn't really have the kind of fitness levels, I guess, to cycle tens of miles if it weren't for an electric bike. And he was telling me he was cycling recently and someone overtook him on a real sporty bike full of, full Lycra on. Anyway, a little while later, he saw him going up the hill and struggling up the hill. My dad said that he overtook this, you know, cyclist in their 20s or 30s and sort of had a little wave as he cycled by. That is exactly the sort of thing that my dad would do. And it was his birthday recently, so I sent him some Lycra in the post. Nice. as a bit of a joke present. And I didn't really think he would wear it, but apparently he's wearing it. And I apologise to his partner on this podcast for doing that. The thing I'm interested in, though, is e-scooters. I think e-scooters really? Have become a real thing in the last couple of months. And they're not actually legal to ride on the road yet. And that's what this government consultation has been brought forward to see whether or not they can be used on the road or not. And actually, I've seen quite a few people in recent weeks just using them on the road, even though there is a threat of fines and points on your license. People just seem to be flouting the rules and just using them anyway. I've got one coming to trial out in the next couple of weeks with my consumer trends column, which I'll be using on private road legally, to see what they're like. And actually, I find it all quite interesting. I've noticed a real uptick on social media, I would say, in lockdown, of people buying electric scooters. It seems to have become quite a thing. It's like a new gadget for people to sort of get their heads around and see how they work. And I think, you know, on the whole, they look like quite good fun, but the trouble is, if you have too many people owning them and then cars on the road and cyclists on the road and pedestrians, there's a lot going on. And I think that's the key for all this infrastructure and what's invested in. How is the future of our mode of transport going to be looking towards the end of this decade? And that's quite a difficult question to answer, but I would imagine that there's going to be quite a lot of people who are interested in e-scooters, who are interested in e-bikes, who want to cut down on how much they drive and rely on public transport, you know, for the view of improving the environment, and also, you know, an investment that hopefully will save them money in the long run from cost of motoring, from cost of commuting. But we need the infrastructure in place. Yeah. And in some parts of Britain, the infrastructure just simply is probably not built to have all of these different things on the road.
Yeah, I come from a different perspective. I'm a diehard pedestrian, so I walked this morning 3 miles just to get a cup of coffee. Why not? Something to do. I guess the thing that I'm a bit concerned, one, I mean, the normal scooters drive me nuts. Anyone who goes on the school run and you get, you know, your ankles.
That's Georgie, that's the one thing I don't miss from working in Kensington. The run between Kensington High Street Station and our office is just full of kids and their parents on those scooters and literally mowing you down. There's no sort of spatial awareness, especially with children, and I don't expect them to have. They've all got them and they just ram into you.
Yeah, it drives me nuts. But there is one sort of query I have, I suppose, because I'm on Halfords, since you mentioned that. I've got my phone in front of me. I am paying attention, but I'm on Halfords. I'm looking at things like maximum range, for example. And for a reasonable price one, as in a cheap price one, we're looking at the sort of £600, £700, you're talking about a maximum range of 20 miles with a recharge time of 4 to 5 miles. 4 to 5 hours.
But Georgie, you wouldn't use it to go like long distances.
No, these are the bikes.
But I think it's more, not many people would use them for a commute longer probably than 10 miles there, 10 miles back, or potentially a little bit more than that, and charging them in the office, I would argue.
So Simon, are they easy to charge though as well, or do you have to have them by your desk?
No, they're very easy to charge. A lot of them you can remove the battery from. So there's a couple of different options to the Go Cycle. Brompton does its own version of an electric folding bike. You won't be surprised to learn that has a range of up to 45 miles. That costs £2,595. So again, pricey. Get yourself down to Decathlon, everyone's favourite sports
shop. Sold out
at the moment,
by the way. Just checked.
Decathlon sells its B-Twin Tilt 500 electric folding bike for 749 miles. Range out on that is up to 22 miles. That's not that far. Halfords has the Carrera Cross City. That is a folding electric bike. Again, £999, range of up to 30 miles. Rally has an Evo electric folding bike. That's 1,350, range of up to 30 miles. That's got the 20-inch wheels on it. Now, yeah, it doesn't sound like very far, but it's not a car. You're not going that far in it. And you also got to remember that you do have the option of just pedaling. And the assistance, you're not necessarily going to be getting full assistance for all of those 30 miles. So the range actually can be, unlike an electric car, it feels to me like the range can be longer. my experience of riding that go cycle, okay, which bear in mind I was riding 8 miles to work and then 8 miles back pretty much every day for the 3 weeks that I had it, I even went up to Centre Parks on it.
And I reckon I probably charged the bike once or twice a week. It wasn't having to charge it every day kind of thing. And I think it's one of those things where, as I said, unlike an electric car where the range always seems to be shorter, I think with the bikes, depending on how much pedal power you put in, you might find the range is actually slightly longer than it says.
Lee, Simon said that these things aren't cheap. The ones he was trying out were $3,000. You can get them for cheaper than that. But are there any employment schemes that can help you get one for cheaper, or a way in which you can pay it? Do you think we're likely to see more of these as well?
Yeah, there's definitely going to be an uptick, I reckon, in people buying e-bikes in the coming months and years. And you can use a cycle to work scheme to get an e-bike. Basically, in a nutshell, the employer buys a bike on your behalf, it claims back the VAT, and then you pay it out of your gross pay rather than net pay. So there's a benefit there. And a lot of people have done that. It's been quite a popular scheme across the country. I know quite a few friends, actually, who have done it quite recently. So, you know, that is one way of getting your hands on one of these pricey bikes. One thing I would definitely say is also think about insurance, because, you know, it's one thing having a bike pinched that's 100 quid, 200 quid. There's another thing having a bike pinched that's a couple of grand.
All right. Well, we're all rushing out to buy bikes, new bikes, electric bikes. One thing we're not certainly rushing out to buy is new cars, or petrol and diesel certainly. Registrations sank 89%, their lowest record in May since 1952. And it seems we aren't as excited by the click and collect option that's come in as our European counterparts. However, one type of car that is booming, electric vehicles, demand up 22%. And again, most popular, Tesla. So Lee, another permanent change, do you think, or just a sign of how bad things are out there for petrol and diesel?
This is not a sign of things to come anytime quickly, I would suggest. This is more like there's a back order of Teslas that have come through that have been registered, and it has a slightly different purchasing model than most other car brands, as in it doesn't really have showrooms. People just kind of order a Tesla. Anyway, it was kind of a click and collect way of buying a car. Anyway, and these SMMT figures, you know, it's quite hard to paint a picture of what's going on, you know, broadly, because basically most showrooms shut down, car sales just completely ground to a halt. It's very difficult. People like, especially car buying, like to go and have a look physically at the car. They want to have a look around it and see the interior as well as the exterior, how it feels, want to take a test drive. All those kind of things, when you're making a big purchase like that, are important to people, and that's why we've seen, you know, a massive crash in car sales inevitably. What goes on from here on will be interesting to see. There's been quite a lot of bad news in the car industry, so to speak, anyway, because we've seen Bentley, 1,000 jobs going, Aston Martin, 500 jobs, Lookers, one of the biggest car dealerships in Britain, 1,500 jobs, being axed. A few glimmers of light, Nissan, has sort of put its faith behind the Sunderland plant in recent weeks, which is good to see. We should keep jobs going up in the northeast. But the whole where the car industry goes now, the reason why I say it's a bit up in the air and we're not too sure what's going to happen, we can now go and have a look in showrooms. We can go and have a look at cars again. But there's going to be a lot of fears over the economy. There's going to be a lot of fears over people losing their jobs. And buying a new car, which has already been a kind of one of those things that people have kind of been put off a little bit by anyway, because of things like Dieselgate and not knowing whether they should be buying petrol or electric or hybrid or what is the best option. All of these kind of things have shaken the industry up, I would say, it's shaken confidence in the industry. The only segment of the car market that kind of improved, which is quite random compared to last month, the same month last year, is, as you say, battery cars. You know, they're up 22%. So a lot of that is driven by Tesla because of the way the model is. So really, you can just say pretty much all car sales just are gone, done. And they've had to revise the forecast down for this year. It's going to be a very, very poor year for car sales. I think the lowest since 1992, could even be lower than that.
A poor year, Simon, but when you throw in all of what we've been talking about, you mix it up, what does this spell out for not just the short term this year. I mean, Lee spoke about some green shoots, but by and large, it's going to be a terrible time. But is it one of those industries that is going to fundamentally change? Are we going to lose our love of petrol and diesel cars? The government's sort of supporting us going out and cycling and walking is going to make it completely different in the future.
I don't think so. I think that people are still going to be buying cars. Car sales were down. I mean, before this even happened, this is pretty much the worst thing that could have hit the motor industry because car sales were already suffering. But car sales were suffering after there had been a colossal boom in car sales a few years ago. And these things always come and go. So I think they will pick back up. I think you will maybe see a bit more of a shift towards buying electric, but some of that's driven by the fact that there's just a lot more choice of more affordable electric cars coming to market at the moment. We talked about this a few podcasts ago. The Model 3 is selling well. It's comparable to buying a BMW 3 Series. You've got the new Hyundai. It's very popular. At the upper end, the I-Pace has been doing very well. But at the cheaper end, you've got things like the Peugeot 208, the electric version of that coming through. There's got an electric version of the Mini coming through. All of these are going to make a big difference. And the gap between prices of petrol, diesel and electric is narrowing, and it's going to continue to narrow. And we talked some time ago about the salary sacrifice scheme, the ability to buy an electric car via salary sacrifice. If you start to see more employers take that up, don't expect that maybe to be the big bang that we thought it might be, because there's a lot of companies that are probably thinking the last thing they need to be worrying about now is trying to help their workers buy electric cars. But you know, it's going to be a big benefit to people if they can save, you know, their income tax on buying a car, and that could be the thing that really changes the game. So I would expect there to be a change. I think the future of mobility, we have an electric future, whether it's bikes, cars, scooters, maybe even planes. One unwelcome factor of the lockdown slightly easing is the planes starting to fly back overhead. And due to a shift in the Luton Airport flight path a few years back, they now fly pretty much overhead my mum's garden, and I'm not welcoming that return of noise pollution. Electric planes, quieter, greener, more suited to travel of the future. Very difficult to achieve, though, apparently, if you're going to be flying lots of people, because it's the energy used to get... Planes are very efficient when they're in the air, but they use a lot of energy to get off the ground.
Lee, is now time to bag a bargain, or would you just not go there?
Well, there's a number of factors at play here, I would say. If you're thinking about buying a new car, if you were thinking about buying a new car before this, anyway, I mean, you should still go ahead and do it, in my opinion. But there's been talks of a scrappage scheme. You know, we've seen scrappage schemes in the past. We saw one sort of 10 years ago, 11 years ago, to kickstart the economy and car buying after the financial crisis. We're talking about a $2,500 scheme here, and the SMMT are saying it cost about £1.5 billion, but it would see 600,000 new cars bought, petrol and diesel. We already have a plug-in car grant of £3,000 for electric cars, so it would kind of bring it all on an equal footing. So people, the thing is, if you start rumouring things like that, it might put people off from buying at the moment, because they think, well, if there's a scrappage scheme on the cards, then, well, I might as well get rid of my old car. And actually, let's face it, look, most people now have nearly new cars. You know, you don't see as many really old polluting vehicles on the road as you did, you know, before that scrappage scheme. You used to see cars, all sorts of things that you just don't see anymore. And whether there's a massive appetite for another scrappage scheme remains to be seen, in my opinion. It might be time to go in a showroom. You might be able to haggle a bit of a deal. You know, it depends on whether or not manufacturers are desperate for your custom, to put it quite frankly. And I would be asking some key questions. And the key question I would definitely be asking is, what is the turnaround time to get a new car delivered? Has it been increased because of lockdown? What's the supply chain like? Because you don't want to be purchasing a new car if you're going to have to wait months and months and months for it. It depends where the car's built and how much of that chain has been disrupted. So I would definitely be asking that before putting an order in. And actually, Whatcar has a great tool, a target price. It's always worth having a look at that. So what the listed manufacturer price is, what Whatcar does is has a look at that and tells you what you should be actually aiming to buy that car for and that new car for. Which is well worth having a look at, because you know that's the price that you might be able to shave a few grand off. And I thought, really interestingly, this week as well, we spoke about this at the start of the show about how we've been kind of encouraged to use our cars, especially for things like short commutes and things, where it's the advice before has always been opposite to that. That Fiat have come up with their first pay-as-you-go. Well, they're saying the first pay-as-you-go car deal, where you basically pay 99 quid a month. And you pay 19 pence for every mile driven, and that doesn't include insurance and fuel and things like that. But if you're making a short commute and the numbers stack up, it could be a good deal without a balloon payment at the end of the 4 years. But those kind of deals, I wouldn't be surprised to see more of that kind of thing coming up. A lot of people use hire purchase to buy a car anyway. You know, they pay a small upfront fee, they pay a monthly amount, and then they either make a balloon payment hand the car back and repeat the process. So a lot of people are used to buying their cars in that way anyway, and a lot of people just want a new car. I hate having a car for 3 to 5 years now. It's almost like that kind of, not throwaway culture, because that's not the right term, but that fast, mm-hmm. want it now, want a new thing, want it, you know, sparkling new. And we're used to all of these subscriptions and all these things that we have. So I think we might see some shifts in the way that the cars are bought, perhaps in that kind of way. And actually, there might be some good finance offers available at showrooms, but it's always worth finding out in advance what they are. Crunch the figures, seeing if you could get, you know, something like a personal bank loan for cheaper, that kind of thing. Just make sure that you do all of your research. And the reason why I say that is because, as someone that has very infrequently gone to the supermarket in recent weeks, I feel very harassed into making quick purchases without actually taking my time and looking at what I'm doing. Things like expiry dates on food. I can imagine going into a car showroom and being like, oh, a bit nervous to be in here, and I don't want anyone waiting around for me to buy that car. You know, it's that kind of like mentality. You know what I mean, though? It's kind of,
I feel
like you can't really take your time in shops and retailers at the moment. And I would just always, when buying a new car, to just take as much, you know, get as much advice and as much things you can do to save money as possible.
Simon, Lee spoke there about scrappage scheme potentially being on the cards. There is talk of a 1.5 billion scrappage scheme kickstart the new car market. The UK motor trade body apparently in talks with the government over the plan, which could see the price of a new petrol and diesel car fall by $2,500. Likely to happen. Will it work? Will it get everything going again?
The motor industry loves to make calls for scrappage schemes. Ever since that first one, we keep getting them. I don't know whether it will happen. We'll have to see what happens to car sales. I mean, if they bounce back, to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if they do bounce back to not much below where they were, then there would be very little need for a scrappage scheme. In all honesty, I think the logic behind the scrappage scheme is deeply flawed, other than boosting car sales. You know, it was promoted last time round as a way to do better by the planet. It ended up with a load of diesel cars on the road, funnily enough, that then we decided were no good for our health. They were better for the planet, but no good for our health. But if you're talking about use of natural resources and protecting the planet, the best thing you can do is not create a new thing. That it's to use an old thing for longer. And the scrappage scheme drove many perfectly good cars off the road. It wreaked absolute havoc on what would have been the kind of next generation of classic cars. I don't think we need to be throwing government money at another scrappage scheme, to be perfectly honest. But I can see why the motor industry, which would like to sell some new cars, happens to disagree with me. Just on some of those discounts, though, I mean, Lee mentioned about the Watt car target price. You can get about £2,600 off a Volvo XC40. Very popular, very good cars. £6,000 off a VW Passat. Mercedes-Benz, you might be looking at £4,000 off a B-Class. Skoda Karoq, very, very popular car. Quite a lot of people quite like those. I know a man who might have one. You can get £2,300 off one of those. That person is Lee, by the way. And then there's some other car, $5,000 off a Jaguar XF. I mean, that's a big car, lovely car, but you get $5,000 off that. You can even get £2,650 off a Renault Zoe, which is pretty good because that's a little electric runaround. There are some cars, though, that you probably won't get any money off. Those are the ones that are very popular, and there's limited numbers of. The Volvo XC40 Recharge, different to the one I mentioned earlier, which is the pure electric vehicle coming out. Ain't going to be getting a discount on that right now. The whacking great Mercedes-Benz G-Class at the other end of the scale, that burns its way through a healthy amount of petrol as you flaunt your wealth. They're very much in demand, despite straitened times. You won't get a discount on those. And bad news for anyone inspired by the end of last week's podcast, you are not going to be getting a discount on a VW California camper van because they are very popular.
Bit more bad news, Lee, not just the camper van, the fuel, the cost of fuel, ever so briefly, Lee. We saw them plummet pretty low if anybody actually got out during lockdown in their cars, but apparently that's not going to last.
No, that's right, Georgie. I managed to fill up with 99p at the last weekend, and it's kind of weird seeing that at the on the screen. You know, as you drive into the forecourts in 99p, it just looks a bit odd these days. I mean, I remember when I was a bit younger, but seeing that really hit home. I was like, this is lockdown. There it is, 99p a litre to fill up. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to last much longer. That's according to AA. We've seen the oil price. Remember when that all went negative? And it feels like a long time ago, doesn't it? But literally, like, not long ago at all. It's had a bit of a rebound towards the end of May. It's gone up to $34 a barrel, which is quite a healthy, steady growth back up after those lows that it managed to reach sort of this time last month, which was the whole reason why prices start to come down. And basically, we are now seeing the age of a pound a litre of fuel probably going to go back on the way up, unfortunately. So if you are sort of got a half a tank, I would encourage filling up now because you're only going to see prices go one way. And if you don't live in a town with an Asda, it's unlikely you saw it go towards a pound anyway, because these supermarkets are the ones that drive all this.
Right, that's it. I'm off after this show. Simon?
I drove to Asda the other day with the intention of filling up my car. Basically, we had to order something from Decathlon, which bizarrely delivers to Asda superstores. So I drove over to the Asda on one evening this week. It was the tail end of the nice weather. And it was about 9:30, 9 o'clock. And I thought, right, I'm going to drive over there in my car in the 205 GTI because it'd be more fun around the country lanes that I can take to get there. And I got there with the intention of getting the stuff, filling up, went into the shop, picked up my stuff, drove around to the petrol station, couldn't fill the car up, doesn't sell super unleaded, had to drive home.
Oh, no. Bad luck, Simon.
I missed out on my chance for really cheap petrol. So when I did finally fill it up, I paid £1.25 a litre.
Wow. But
well, that's super unleaded. Super unleaded is more expensive.
All right, then.
Yeah.
All right. Well, memo to you, Simon.
Yeah.
Don't get a car.
Memo to anyone who has to use high-octane petrol, don't drive to Asda to get it because they don't have it.
Right. Thanks for that tip, Simon.
I mean, and I wouldn't have normally done it, right? But because I think that, I believe that BP and Shell's high octane petrol is better quality. But Rob Hull, our motoring correspondent, tells me I'm an idiot and it's all the same petrol, and that there's no proof that Shell or BP's petrol is any better quality than supermarket petrol.
If you have any views on this, please do get in contact. Editor at This Is Money. If you have some views, I have no idea. I've never even heard that they were any different. I just thought it was the same old stuff. But anyway, there you go. Final one, a fair question from a reader who is, can we say, a little bit peeved, maybe, with a fair few delivery drivers up and down their road, creating a bit of a ruckus, you know? The point they want to know, though, once you get rid of the sort of anger, I think, with the huge rise in people ordering items online, and for many, becoming a delivery driver has been a job lifeline, they were just wondering if they need proper insurance. Is it illegal to drive with your rear window obscured? And can they be fined for engine idling and leaving their car unlocked with the keys in the ignition? Surely that kind of behaviour would result in higher premiums. I'm not sure the person who wrote in is that bothered about their insurance. They're just bothered by the number of delivery drivers being bad behaviour down their road. Am I? Is that right, Lee?
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, Georgie. Yeah, I think this reader has written in, and it's basically, I've seen it around here. There's definitely a rise in just, people that aren't delivery drivers making deliveries because, you know, let's face it, a lot of us have gone online to buy things, you know, not just supermarket deliveries who have their own fleet of vans, but things like clothes and other things from places like Amazon. These places have been swamped with orders, so they've had to take on temporary drivers to make sure all of these goods can be delivered. Now, not everyone has a van, so that means they're probably using their personal car to make these deliveries. So I think the person here is right in asking, because if at the end of the day, if they cause an accident or that kind of thing and they weren't insured, I mean, that's quite a big deal, isn't it? You don't want to be having an accident with someone that wasn't insured. So I think with a lot of people doing this, and they're right in saying that this has been a job lifeline. Let's face it, we're in a time now where a lot of people have been losing their jobs or have been furloughed, and this makes total sense. And even I've seen a few taxi drivers doing it. You know, taxi drivers have definitely become makeshift delivery drivers. And it's just a good way, I guess, of making money while things are the way they are at the moment. Now, if you are tempted into using your car as a delivery vehicle, you're not covered for it on an ordinary car insurance policy. Now, whether people know this or not, I don't know. And whether you are someone that has been making these deliveries while doing that, well, you shouldn't be. Basically, if you use a car or van for paid services, for example, dropping off parcels or delivering food, you must have cover for carriage of goods for hire and reward. So you need to make sure that you're covered for that. And then things like obscuring your back window, I've seen that as well, where parcels have been stacked up and drivers are just driving down the road with all the rear window obscured. Mm. I mean, that is not safe driving. You know, that is not adhering to the highway code. It's not good behavior. And then we've had this whole thing about engine idling, you know, about councils have the power to fine and police force have the power to fine you if you leave your engine on because of environmental concerns. Oh, there's been loads of that going on. You know, you're just quickly whipping up, getting out of your car, leaving the engine on, quickly delivering a parcel. And let's face it, a lot of delivery drivers aren't even knocking on the door, you know, because of all this social distancing, contactless delivery. You kind of bung it on the doorstep and you dash off straight into the car that's still got its engine running. So look, I think these are legitimate concerns. And I think that, you know, there has been a rise in this.
I think you're right, Lee. I think you're right. Right, that's it for this week. You can keep up to date with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team or anything that you'd like them to look into, Simon.
You can email us at editor@thisismoney.co.uk. You can tweet us at thisismoney, and you can come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast to find all the podcasts past and join in the debate and read the comments. And maybe make a suggestion that people should get an electric cargo bike to do their deliveries.
Marvellous, marvellous. Nicely rounded up there. And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.